Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do, keep breathing.
That's right, when you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host, former mayor of a California beach town and best-selling author, Debbie Peterson, coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio and video platforms, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and many, many more. In fact, we're proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast in the top 50 on Player FM and number two caregiver podcast on FeedSpot out of the top 60 and number two on CaringVillage.com. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. Jeffrey Madden is a co-founder and chief executive officer at Advantage Therapeutics, which is a clinical biotechnology firm developing a novel immunotherapy for Alzheimer's disease. Before we get started, I do want to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Julie Potiker, author of the new book, Snap, From Chaos to Calm. And she talks about mindfulness, very much needed in these days. And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews on our membership website, including this one, at thecaregiverdave.com or any of our other 26 global audio and video networks that I mentioned earlier. Okay, enough of that. Jeffrey, so great to have you on the Caregiver Dave radio show. I always like to ask my guests, just who is Jeffrey Madden and why was he placed on this earth?
It's great to be here, Debbie and Dave. And I'm a bit of a metaphysical guy, so my answer to that will be define my dharma, be awakened. And really, you know, find a place in the world in terms of purpose to work with other people to make the world a better place. And I think there's two halves to life. There's a first half chasing success as societally defined. And the second half, God willing, we all make that to chase significance, to do something bigger than you to make the world a better place. And so the first half of my life was very much focused on success in finance as institutional investment manager. And I dare say awakened to find a bigger purpose. And a lot of that had to do with necessary suffering by way of my late grandmother, Genevieve, who suffered from Alzheimer's. And I really put my heart and soul into finding, as you said, an immunotherapy that I think can make the world a better place and band together, you know, with world-class people to do exactly that and help people in this humanitarian crisis, both patients and caregivers, to make a difference. So I'm squarely focused on that and in a very synchronistic way. Happy to report that we're making great progress on that. I'd love to tell you more about it.
Yeah, we had someone on not too long ago who was experimenting with some Alzheimer's medication. And it's the first time I've ever heard that the medication was actually making a patient better, not just keeping them from getting worse. And now you're talking about something. Is there a breakthrough going on in the Alzheimer's research these days?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, obviously, you see the headlines these days with the monoclonal antibodies with both Biogen and more recently Lilly that is slowing the decline. And, you know, if I go all the way back to my days as a biotech investor, where, you know, I invested in companies that really made the world a better place, Celgene, Genentech, Illumina, Intuitive Surgical, you know, these are companies that just made structural change, you know, in their respective indications. And, you know, this pattern recognition, you know, is vernacular, you know, within investment management. And I'll just say this, that, you know, mice have been cured, you know, from Alzheimer's, cancer, HIV. But one of the biggest lessons learned for me is that it rarely translates, animal system rarely translates into human system. And what I think, you know, is a big breakthrough here And something I detected going back about 10 years ago, you know, when my late grandmother Genevieve was ravaged by Alzheimer's, is that there's big signal, signal in terms of analysis with priming your peripheral immune system to reduce neuroinflammation in the brain. You saw it with different vaccines and adjuvants. And, you know, these penicillin moments of efficacious and safe outcomes for Alzheimer's patients was the strongest signal I saw. And I dare say, you know, I've got a pretty good pattern recognition managing a multi-billion dollar fund back in the day. And now, you know, what you see is this, I will call it a breakthrough, you know, is making its way, you know, into the clinic. And I'd say we're at the vanguard, you know, of doing a confirmation study. But 7 years ago, there's a study, a big phase two study for a conjugate protein vaccine that was targeting A-beta 42. And, you know, this vaccine had, five arms. You know, the vaccine failed, is going after amyloid. But one of the control arms, you had this stunning disease modification where 50% of the patients in this control arm, where there's 50 patients, had, you know, the same or better cognition. With hippocampus as a downstream biomarker, you know, and this is an adjuvant, alum, which is our lead compound, which we're taking into a clinical trial right now. And so if you could have, you know, that type of treatment effect, you know, I definitely would classify that as a breakthrough. So we're excited to do exactly that and get into a human clinical trial here in the next month or two and get results out in 2025.
You know, that's great. Does it frustrate you the way society keeps changing the definition of terms? I always thought that the word vaccine meant if you take it, you won't get it. And apparently we learned in the last few years that's not so. So how are you defining the word vaccine when you use it?
Well, you know, vaccines, you've got, you know, different classifications, you know, for vaccines, and you got to be, you know, very specific if you're talking about, you know, subunit, live attenuated, or mRNA. And of course, you know, we've seen more recently, you know, this mRNA, I'll say broad adoption. But that's a different vaccine relative to subunit, think flu, and certainly live attenuated. I'm on the board of Rational Vaccines, which is developing a live attenuated vaccine for HSV-1 and HSV-2. That's an ancient virus with 75 proteins. And so you're getting full antigenic breadth, generally speaking, with live attenuated. mRNA, you know, is just a different thing. And expressing a spike protein, for example, for COVID, you know, may not have the same efficacious outcomes. So, it's language is perception's silent partner, a wise man once said, and I think it certainly applies to vaccines.
You mentioned that mice have Alzheimer's. How do you know, and how do you measure a mouse who has different stages of Alzheimer's? That just really confuses me.
Yeah, and it's, you know, this
are
is something
that's bumping into walls. They can't find their cheese. I mean, what is it?
I mean, you know, like this is something that's confused a lot of people, you know, and, you know, it goes back to transgenic mice where, you know, you're basically changing some genomic sequence so that these mice create, in the case of Alzheimer's research, amyloid, this toxic protein. You know, but mice are much different than primates and certainly Homo sapiens. And so, you know, this translation, Rudy Tanzi, you look up ChatGPT, top Alzheimer's scientist in the world, he ranks as number one. He's out of Harvard. He's the chairman of our SAB. And he has this aphorism that what happens in mice stays in mice. And this translation in the human system, you know, is just a very difficult thing to do. I've got a lot of tracks in my back relying on mouse model. Preclinical. And so, you know, one of my lessons learned, just to riff on this for a second, is, you know, start with human system signal. And I think that's what you're seeing in Alzheimer's. You're seeing that happen where nearly a third of the over 180 clinical trials in Alzheimer's are repurposed agents. where you detected, you know, this signal. And in our case, I'll say, you know, penicillin moment, but it's all about what you do after a penicillin moment that matters. And there's a big Herculean lift, you know, to get to preclinical, to clinical. And then, but again, to this solve backwards, you know, mental model, I think that that's well suited when you're dealing with a syndrome, not necessarily a disease, and it's multigenic. That's really important, is right there. You know, when you say Alzheimer's disease, you know, there's a tip off here that, again, language being perception, silent partner, I would offer that you're talking about a heterogeneous condition that's multigenic that doesn't suit itself well to traditional drug development, going after one target.
Debbie, you got any questions?
If we're a little bit talking about a little confusion, how does the immunotherapy come into all of this? What about what you're talking about has anything to do with immunotherapy?
Yeah. Okay. Well, technically, you know, the monoclonal antibodies, you know, that's immunotherapy exogenous. Okay. And what I'm talking about, you know, is, you know, endogenous, and, you know, just like mechanism, I could speak to, you know, our lead compound, you know, ADOA4. It's, you know, at a very specific dose at 2 mg, you know, it's injected, you know, subcutaneous. You know, think about like getting a vaccine shot for the flu. It stays at the site of injection. And then, of course, yeah, you have a immune response, both innate and adaptive. And you have phagocytosis, and you have macrophages, which are kind of like Pac-Man of your innate immune system, come in, and they secrete, in the case of our compound, a very specific interleukin. Think about interleukins as being groups of cytokines and the Wi-Fi of your immune system. And so this Wi-Fi system gets engaged. And in the case of this interleukin, it's known to cross-communicate to the brain and modulate the activation of your brain's resident immune cells called microglia. Okay. And the microglia, you know, when they get into an inflammatory state, bad things happen, you know, in the brain. And so to switch the microglia from neuroinflammatory to neuroprotective and regain homeostasis, okay, that's the indirect mechanism of action for our immunotherapy. And it's your body is like a bioreactor. If you just point it in the right direction, it could do amazing things. And so many times, go ahead, please.
Well, so the simple explanation, and too simple, I'm sure, is that it's not that it makes you immune to a whole bunch of stuff. It's not like improving your immune system or reducing your inflammation necessarily, but it makes you immune to the things, the amyloids that interfere with brain function that are active in Alzheimer's. Is that accurate? To say it,
yeah, I would say it. Yeah, you know, so again, like, we don't know, you know, exactly what the cause is here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, everyone has been, you know, going after, and it really was dogma for a very long period of time. You know, the amyloid hypothesis that, you know, if you clear this toxic protein, you know, that you have a reversal, mm-hmm. you know, of Alzheimer's. And so, you know, it's, you know, going after, you know, just one target, you know, for something heterogeneous, you know, is right. a very difficult task. And so, you know, what I would say is, you know, there's the pathophysiology, what we believe for Alzheimer's is inflammation. And so if you take, you know, this biology of aging worldview, and we know one of the lanes of aging, you know, is inflammation. And we know the biggest causation for, you know, dementia is aging. And so the pathophysiology, what we would offer, you know, is a primary driver of the pathophysiology, you know, is inflammation. And so, you know, just to riff on that for a second, that, you know, so you have neurons, you know, that are anatomically intact, but because of this, you know, neuroinflammation, you have a functional block. You know, you have 86 billion neurons, and you have, you know, thousands of synapses have a functional block because of that neuroinflammation. So if you could reduce it, you could have restoration, you know, of cognitions. But you got to catch it early. You got to catch it way early. Yeah.
So do
and
you
that's
see
one
it,
of the, oh, please go ahead.
Well, do you see it as being something that would work alongside some of the current things that are working, or do you see it as being entirely different?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key point, you know, is that long-term, neuro's got to get where oncology is. And you're in the era of combination therapy in oncology. But to do that, you need, you know, some cornerstone therapeutics, at least one or two, you know, that you could build around that have, you know, very significant treatment of clinically meaningful treatment effect of, like, let's call it 50% or higher. Of course, safe, you know, easy to administer and low cost. You know, the pathway inhibitors, really in oncology were a catalyst, you know, for the era of combination therapy that's going on right now. And to your point, you know, the monoclonal antibodies with Lilly and Biogen, you know, they're targeting amyloid. They're doing a great job of clearing amyloid. But just imagine if you have that at a lower dose to deal with microhemorrhaging that we know is part of the side effects. And, you know, our lead compound I'd offer, or there's others out there that target inflammation. And that's a great step, you know, to get after, you know, different targets, you know, in a clinician setting. And then, you know, ideally, you know, I will emphasize that I think the cornerstone therapeutic will have a pleiotropic effect, you know, so there's simultaneous, you know, pathways and targets, that are being initiated. By a compound that really probably will be the signature of a true, significantly clinically disease modifying therapeutic will have that, out of all likelihood, pleiotropic effect. And that's what we're seeing with our compound.
Can you define pleiotropic for those of us who aren't medically oriented?
Sure. So really, you know, it's a pleiotropic effect is simultaneously producing more than one effect.
So you're saying it combines with other medications or can be combined with other methodologies and fix the multiple things that appear to be causes or apparent in Alzheimer's.
Yeah, just think about like A2A4, like our lead compound, you know, the indirect pathway I described. You know, to flip and switch the brain from neuroinflammatory to neuroprotective. And we're also identifying in our preclinical, you know, this clearance of metabolic waste, you know, that could also be inducing inflammation. So you have a indirect pathway and a direct pathway. So that would fall into this pleiotropic effect for, the A2A4 compound. We got a lot more work to do, but I'm just sharing that as an example.
Yeah.
Why is the clinical trial failure rate so high?
Yeah, you know, that gets a lot to do with, you know, this classical approach, you know, and again, you know, right there, you know,
should
they
change
Alzheimer's
it?
Disease. Well, what really happened was, you know, going after, you know, this amyloid, you know, just turned out to be, a very difficult lift. And I'll just share this with you, you know, because, you know, the majority of these trials, until more recently, the primary target has been amyloid. Interestingly enough, in the last 2 years, inflammation has become the primary target, which is great. I think that's amazing that you decouple from this dogma of targeting, you know, amyloid. But just think about this, where based on autopsy studies, 30% of older adults, you know, have brains loaded, you know, with enough amyloid beta, tau, or both, you know, to indicate, you know, an Alzheimer's diagnosis, but without any of the symptoms.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, like that gets into this, the current pathology is incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
so it's gets back to this heterogeneous reality, you know, of Alzheimer's and neuro generally and Alzheimer's specifically. And you have 100 different genes headlined by, you know, APOE4. And so you need to have, you know, this cornerstone therapeutic or therapeutics to emerge to, you know, to get after multiple pathways and targets. And that's happening. You know, you had a watershed moment just more recently, and you know, the end of the beginning is the way I classify that. And now this, it opens up, you know, for folks like us, you know, to work really hard and get the money raised we need and get into clinic and, you know, show that, you know, we could go after neuroinflammation and perhaps even have a bigger treatment effect.
Why do you think, you're going to have more success?
Well, it has a lot to do with, you know, again, this lesson learned for me is, rely on human system signal, and don't just take my word for it either. You know, Suzanne Hendricks is the leading AD statistician, I'd say, in the world. She's the CEO founder of Pentara. And, you know, she did, you know, this penicillin moment, you know, I referenced before, this predecessor trial where you saw this amazing, you know, disease modification with 50% of the patients, you know, in that control arm at 2 mg/alum, you know, having the same or better cognition. And the way I'll just read exactly, because when it comes to statistics, you know, I want to be precise. In her words, the 2 mg/A2O4 control arm of the trial showed a significant slower decline over the combined 4 other groups on clinical outcomes, cognition, and quality of life, and MRI hippocampal volume as biomarker. You know, so that's coming from, you know, one of the leading Alzheimer's statisticians in the world. And then, you know, Rudy Tanzi, Dr. Rudy Tanzi, you know, he's the chairman, you know, of our SAB, really, you know, just guiding our preclinical and mechanism of action. And then there's a whole host of world-class people that have come together because they see this human system signal. And the final, you know, stamp of approval I'll share with you is, on the regulatory side, you know, I think one of the biggest risks, particularly for clinical biotech, doesn't matter what I think or investors think, the ultimate due diligence is regulators. So if they don't check off, you're not doing, you're not getting in the human system for good reason too. And we just, were awarded, you know, this innovation passport, by way of, the MHRA, in the UK. The MHRA is the FDA equivalent in the UK, which is one of the most coveted accelerated approval pathways in the world. We were just awarded that. We're the only Alzheimer's indication at the moment to have that innovation passport. And central to their decision-making was this data that I referenced Suzanne commenting on, and how that treatment effect stacks up relative to historical studies, including the monoclonal antibodies. And what you see in this data, we're about to publish on it, is that the treatment effect is better and faster, you know, relative to, I'll call it the current standard of care. And it's so nice to be able to say we have a certain level of standard of care, you know, that's just happened, you know, with the FDA approval.
Well, you know, our audience are burned out caregivers, and 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do. But those who are caring for an Alzheimer's patient, that number goes up to 40% will die before their loved ones do. What do you hope by being on the show that these caregivers to Alzheimer's patients will be able to take away? I mean, is it just giving them a renewed hope that help is on the way, or, you know, what should they take away from this interview?
Yeah, I think the big takeaway, you know, for sure, you know, hope is on the way for sure. And, you know, this isn't, something preclinical. This isn't, you know, something in mouse model, you know, this is working backwards from human system signal from a penicillin moment, with statistical rigor and a world-class team that's been recognized, by one of the top 3 regulators in the world. Mm. And we're moving at warp speed.
Well, you certainly have enough money. Your Alzheimer's Association probably takes in more than the Cancer Society, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the fundraise is the fundraise, you know, and we've got the support from amazing, you know, investors, including R&B Capital in Chicago.
Alzheimer's doesn't decide who's going to get it, you know, the rich, the poor, the racial, the diversity, the men, women, you name it, it picks everybody. And many times it picks, you know, intelligent geniuses. And it picks us dumb people as well.
You know, my grandmother had a photographic memory. And, you know, I was sitting right there, like so many other people, helpless. And back to your original question is, you know, that steered me into, you know, finding my Dharma and finding a purpose. And here we are, you know, to come back around to your last question, you know, just over 2 years ago, I sunsetted my finance career, you know, came in as a co-founder, obviously, you know, leading, you know, a world-class team. And in just over 2 years, we've allocated, you know, just over $10 million. And our first patient in is in 2 months. And, you know, we'll have data, interim data, 6 months after last patient in. So conservatively, I'm thinking Q2 2025. This innovation passport allows us to have patient access starting in the UK. So patient access, if we confirm, we got to execute. The biggest risk for us is execution at this point. You know, if we have a confirmation study that's successful and mirrors or better, you know, what we did before, we'll have patient access. And so that's more than hope. That's concrete, you know, timelines here, you know, to do something about this humanitarian crisis.
Well, Debbie?
Well, congratulations. I'm just thrilled to hear it. And what I like most about it is the fact that you're not saying we are the cure, the only cure, and, you know, talk to us and no one else. I love it that you are working in tandem or hope that it will be something that works in tandem. So thank you for your work. I think it's marvelous.
Yeah, well, thanks, you know, for being out there, you know, allowing me to communicate and others too. You know, and that's the point is, back to the significance, you know, that doing something to make the world a better place that you can't do by yourself. We got to bond together to make this happen. And that's exactly what's happening, you know, at Advantage. And you guys are the tip of the spear, you know, out there to allow people to hear the important work that's being done. So thank you.
Yes. Well, it's amazing how time flies when you're having fun here. How can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more or want to ask you questions or want to read a book that you wrote? Did you write a book?
I've published in my finance days in peer-reviewed journals. I haven't written a book just yet. Maybe, you know, the chapter's being written right now. But you could find, you know, Advantage Therapeutics. That's our company. The website's out there. Jeff@advantagetherapeutics.com is my email. I won't give my cell just yet, but those are two different avenues for people to get a hold of us. And yeah, I really appreciate you know, the time and you know, dedication to your guys' craft. You know, it means a lot to me to be on the show.
Great. Well, it's likewise here. Debbie, how can people reach you and learn more about what you do?
I've got 4 or 5 books out now, and DebbiePeterson.com is the easiest way to find those. And I have a podcast and all kinds of fun things happening. So just go to DebbiePeterson.com.
Yeah. And remember that all our live shows become recorded pod and video cast on all your favorite platforms. Just a plug for me, my number one best-selling book, Secrets from the Hammock, Uncommon Wisdom for Uncommon Times. It's spreading wisdom all over the world, and it's available wherever books are sold. And also on my free membership website, caregiverdave.com, where you can also schedule a free 30-minute initial coaching call to talk about whatever you're struggling with. Many times a 30-minute worth of wisdom is all it takes to resolve a problem. And I invite you all to join my Caregiver Dave Facebook online support group community of 34,000 caregivers lots of tools, resources, videos, this radio show, and much more. You know, we're just trying to keep as many of you caregivers who are dying before your loved ones do alive, because stats are very worrisome. Hey, also, if you like or follow, if you hit the like or follow button on whatever platform you're watching or listening to this interview on, it helps us reach even more caregivers by improving Google's search engine algorithms, however that works. So thanks again to all my listeners out there, to my guests, my co-hosts, all over the world, for tuning in every Wednesday and making us the number one caregiver podcast and radio show on the internet. So until next week, same time, same channel, may God richly bless you all. Bye-bye. I'm Dave Nassani. My fourth book, Secrets from the Hammock, Uncommon Wisdom for Uncommon Times, is a number one bestseller on Amazon. As a young boy, I was told I possessed an unusual amount of wisdom for my age. As a young man, I found myself counseling friends and older family members whenever they needed answers to their problems. Then at 21, I read the Bible for the very first time and learned how King Solomon asked God for wisdom instead of riches, yet he received both. I was so impressed that I too asked God for wisdom. Soon after, I discovered when lying on my hammock, I would receive wisdom from God. This book is the result of my passion to share with the world wisdom's tremendous benefits. Join me as I reveal practical aspects of wisdom for the mind, body, and spirit. 31 lessons I learned from God that can change your life. Available in hardcover, Audible, Kindle, and paperback, wherever books are sold. I've spoken all over the country and London, and am available to speak at your event. Contact me at hammockwisdom.com.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing.